So welcome to the show. The best around, it just depends if I'm in your town.
All right, welcome back to the deep dive. We are wrapping up our vitamin Dakey series today.
That's right.
And vitamin E. This one's I feel like we've covered D, A, and K, and they all have pretty important roles to play, but E's always felt kind of mysterious to me.
It is. It's an interesting one, and it's a fitting end to our exploration.
Yeah.
But before we dive into vitamin E, I think it might be good to just briefly revisit some of the key takeaways from the others.
Yeah, totally. So starting with D, right? I mean, for me, what really stuck out there was its dual nature, you know? Like, it's both a vitamin that we get from the sun and from our diet, but it also acts as a hormone, like a regulator in the body.
Exactly.
And calcium regulation, bone health. I mean, that was huge.
That's a big one. And that's one of the reasons why it has such far-reaching influence, because it has that hormonal aspect.
Exactly. Then we went on to vitamin A. And, you know, I always think of vitamin A as like, oh, that's the vision one. But it's so much more than that. Okay, it's not just seeing in the dark, right? It's overall eye health. And then we talked about immune function, cell growth, really important stuff. But also we learned that, you know, with vitamin A, like, more isn't always better.
Right. Right. Yeah. That's, you know, it's the Goldilocks principle applies to so many things in nutrition.
Totally. And then KK was really interesting. I think for me, and I feel like this is probably true for a lot of people, I always thought of vitamin K as like the blood clotting one.
Right.
Right. Like if you get a cut, you need vitamin K so it clots.
Yep.
But its role in bone metabolism, that was news to me.
Right.
Like specifically activating osteocalcin to help bind calcium. Mm-hmm. Really, really important. And then, you know, of course, we have to mention the whole interaction with anticoagulant meds, right? Like,
oh, yeah. Big one.
That's a big one. People got to be careful with that. So,
yeah, that highlighted how intricate the web of interactions is between nutrients and medications.
For sure. Okay, so that brings us to vitamin E. So if the others were kind of, you know, they had these more singular roles, vitamin E, it seems to operate in a more kind of general way.
Yeah, you're picking up on something. Its primary, I guess, claim to fame is as a powerful antioxidant.
Okay.
So think of it as a dedicated protector of your cells against damage from these harmful molecules called free radicals.
Okay. Free radicals. We hear about these all the time. What exactly are they? How do they cause damage?
So free radicals are basically unstable molecules. They can wreak havoc on cells.
Mm-hmm.
And that contributes to aging and the development of various chronic diseases. And this damage that free radicals cause, it's called oxidative stress. And vitamin E is an antioxidant. It essentially donates an electron to these unstable molecules, neutralizes them, and that prevents them from causing further harm.
So it's like a peacekeeper at the cellular level.
Yeah, I like that. That's a good analogy. Mm-hmm. And because vitamin E is fat soluble, it can embed itself in cell membranes, which are largely composed of fats. So that means it's kind of right there on the front lines.
Oh, okay.
To defend against free radicals before they can attack those vital structures.
Uh-huh.
So it's preventing this damaging chain reaction known as lipid peroxidation. You know, almost like how fats in food can go rancid when they're exposed to air,
if they're not
protected.
Okay.
So it's right there where the action is. I've also read about different types of vitamin E, like tocopherols, tocotrienols.
Mm-hmm.
Are these all equally important? Yeah. So both tocopherols and tocotrienols belong to the vitamin E family. But alpha tocopherol, that's the form our bodies preferentially absorb and utilize. However, other forms, particularly gamma tocopherol and delta tocopherol, they also have significant antioxidant activity, but they often target different types of free radicals. So think of it as like alpha tocopherol is like your primary defense, you know, preventing new damage, while gamma tocopherol is like a cleanup crew for existing threats.
So like specialized units.
Exactly.
The antioxidant force. I love it. All right. Let's rewind a bit. Let's talk about the history of vitamin E. Like, when did scientists first discover that this was something we needed to be paying attention to?
Yeah, so vitamin E was discovered in the early 20th century. Initially, it was identified as essential for reproduction in rats.
Okay.
But it wasn't long before researchers pinpointed alpha tocopherol as the specific compound that meets human nutritional requirements. And historically, a lack of vitamin E was linked to some pretty serious health issues.
Like what kind of issues? Like what would happen if you didn't get enough vitamin E?
So historically, and still in rare cases today, severe vitamin E deficiency has been linked to neuromuscular problems and difficulties with vision. These issues were often observed in individuals with conditions that impair fat absorption, things like cystic fibrosis or celiac disease, because remember, vitamin E being fat soluble, it needs dietary fat to be properly absorbed.
Right.
And premature infants with their less developed digestive systems were also at a higher risk.
So it sounds like the initial understanding was really about just preventing these more pronounced deficiency-related illnesses.
Exactly.
Okay, so we know it's this potent antioxidant safeguarding our cells from damage. Does it have other roles in the body?
Yeah, it does. While its antioxidant function, it is it's paramount. Mm-hmm. Vitamin E also contributes to some other pretty important biological processes. Mm. For example, it plays a supportive role in our immune system. So research suggests that it can enhance the activity of various immune cells, helping the body better defend against infections.
So it's not just repairing damage, it's also like bolstering our defenses.
Precisely. It's thought to influence the function and communication of different components of the immune system. And furthermore, vitamin E is involved in the formation of red blood cells, and it also contributes to maintaining the health and proper function of our blood vessels.
So red blood cell formation, healthy blood vessels, that sounds pretty fundamental.
Oh yeah, very, very important. And there's also some intriguing preliminary research exploring the potential role of vitamin E in neurodegenerative diseases, so like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's. Mm-hmm. The hypothesis here is that by mitigating oxidative stress in the brain, vitamin E might offer some level of protection against these conditions. However, and this is very important to note, this is still early stage research. More studies in humans are needed to draw firm conclusions.
So some promising avenues,
yeah.
but not definitive answers yet.
Not yet.
All right. So let's turn to specific health benefits. What does the bulk of the scientific evidence tell us?
Okay, so regarding cardiovascular health, observational studies have indicated a connection between higher dietary intake of vitamin E and a lower incidence of coronary heart disease.
Okay.
So this initial finding was quite encouraging given its antioxidant properties.
Right.
And its potential to protect blood vessels. However, when large-scale clinical trials were conducted, where participants were given vitamin E supplements to prevent cardiovascular events, the outcomes were surprisingly inconsistent. So many of these trials failed to demonstrate any significant benefits, and some even hinted at potential risks with high doses.
Like?
Such as a possible increased risk of heart failure and hemorrhagic stroke.
Oh, wow. So it's kind of like what we see with diet versus supplementation a lot of times.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That's a critical distinction. And it's a pattern we see repeated with other nutrients as well.
Yeah.
So, for instance, the American Heart Association currently recommends obtaining antioxidants through a diet, rich in fruits, vegetables, nuts,
mm-hmm.
rather than relying on vitamin E supplements for cardiovascular protection.
Makes sense. What about cancer prevention?
Okay, so cancer prevention. Some studies have indeed found associations between higher vitamin E intake, again, primarily through food sources, and a lower risk of certain types of cancer, including breast, lung, and gastric cancers. So the underlying idea is that by preventing DNA damage caused by free radicals, vitamin E might offer some degree of protection.
Mm-hmm.
However, similar to cardiovascular disease, the evidence for vitamin E supplementation in preventing cancer is mixed.
Yeah. Okay, so again, it's that same thing, like prioritize getting it from whole foods.
Exactly.
What about cognitive health?
Right.
That's with an aging population, keeping our brain sharp, that's a big one.
It is. There's definitely interest in vitamin E's potential to support cognitive health and potentially slow down age-related cognitive decline, again, likely due to its antioxidant effects in the brain. However, the current body of evidence is not yet conclusive, and more rigorous research is needed to determine if vitamin E supplementation has a significant role to play in this area.
Okay. And what are some of these other potential benefits that we hear about, like for skin health? I've even heard people talk about it for like menstrual pain and things like that.
Yeah. So there's been some preliminary research exploring the potential benefits of vitamin E for skin health, possibly related to its antioxidant and moisturizing properties. Some studies have also investigated its role in alleviating symptoms of dysmenorrhea, so that's menstrual pain,
okay.
and even improving lung function, particularly in smokers.
Yeah.
However, you know, across these areas, the need for more robust, well-designed studies to confirm these potential benefits and establish optimal intake levels is consistently emphasized.
Okay, so we've talked about the importance of getting enough vitamin E. Mm-hmm. We've talked about the potential benefits with that clear emphasis on dietary sources. What happens if you don't get enough?
Right.
I mean, we talked about severe deficiency earlier, but what about just like less pronounced shortages?
Right. So true, severe deficiency is relatively uncommon in healthy individuals, consuming a diet with adequate fat. However, you know, as we discussed, certain underlying conditions can increase the risk. So these include genetic disorders affecting fat absorption, cystic fibrosis, very restrictive low-fat diets, cholestatic liver disease, and celiac disease.
And what are some of the signs and symptoms that that might indicate deficiency?
Okay, so the symptoms primarily manifest as neurological issues. We might observe muscle weakness, loss of coordination, peripheral neuropathy, that's nerve damage causing tingling or numbness in the hands and feet, and ataxia, which is characterized by problems with balance and coordination. Vision problems, specifically retinopathy, which is damage to the retina, can also occur. Additionally, there's some evidence suggesting that vitamin E deficiency might impair immune function, particularly in older adults. And we should also remember ataxia with vitamin E deficiency, or AVED. So this is a specific genetic condition caused by defects in the protein responsible for transporting alpha-tocopherol in the body.
Wow. So lack of vitamin E can have like really significant consequences, particularly for the nervous system. This brings us to the topic of supplementation, like when is it actually necessary,
right,
or genuinely beneficial?
Yeah. So supplementation is undoubtedly essential for treating diagnosed vitamin E deficiencies. Mm. It can be crucial in reversing symptoms and preventing long-term complications. In individuals with malabsorption syndromes or genetic disorders that affect vitamin E levels. In some specific cases, supplementation might also be considered to bolster antioxidant defenses under medical guidance.
But we've also heard about the potential downsides of high doses.
Yes.
So what's the tightrope walk here?
That's a really crucial point. While supplementation can be beneficial in certain situations, it's really vital to exercise caution regarding high doses due to potential risks, such as an increased tendency for bleeding, and in some studies, even an elevated risk of hemorrhagic stroke. So the general recommendation is that obtaining vitamin E primarily through a diverse and balanced diet is the preferred approach. Foods rich in vitamin E, like nuts, seeds, vegetable oils, leafy green vegetables, they offer a wide array of other beneficial nutrients as well.
Right. And what about how vitamin E interacts with other nutrients? Like, do they all work together?
Yeah, there is some evidence suggesting that vitamin E can have synergistic effects with other antioxidants, such as vitamin C, as well as with other compounds like B3, selenium, and glutathione.
Yeah.
So potentially enhancing, you know, the overall antioxidant defense network in the body. They kind of can work in concert to protect against oxidative damage.
Okay. So again, it's that key message of food first.
Exactly.
Supplements, you know, if at all, judiciously. Now, you know, going back to your comment earlier about vitamin E feeling kind of mysterious, are there still a lot of unanswered questions out there? Like, are scientists still debating things when it comes to this vitamin?
Well, absolutely. One of the major areas of ongoing research and debate revolves around the inconsistencies that we see between, you know, promising results from observational studies and then the often less encouraging outcomes from clinical intervention trials, particularly concerning cardiovascular benefits. Mm-hmm. So scientists are still actively investigating the reasons behind those discrepancies. There are also ongoing discussions about the potential risks associated with high-dose vitamin E supplementation,
right,
including the possibility of increased mortality and the development of certain cancers in some populations studied. And a lot of current research is really focused on trying to determine more precise dosing strategies for vitamin E in specific health conditions where it might offer therapeutic benefits.
So what's like the cutting edge? What are scientists really excited about right now in terms of vitamin E research?
So current research is delving deeper into the roles of the less common forms of vitamin E, such as gamma tocopherol, to understand their unique functions and potential health benefits beyond what alpha tocopherol provides. There's also a significant focus on how vitamin E impacts immune function during infections.
Okay.
You know, how it might help modulate the body's response. And as we've discussed, you know, getting clearer, more conclusive evidence regarding cardiovascular benefits in specific subgroups of the population remains a priority. And finally, advancements in developing more sensitive and reliable methods for measuring vitamin E levels and its byproducts in the body, the biomarkers, are crucial for a better understanding of its impact on overall health.
It sounds like the story of vitamin E is really still being written.
It is, yeah.
So as we kind of wrap up this deep dive on this, you know, final fat-soluble vitamin in this DIG series, what are the most important things you want our listeners to take away?
Okay, so The key takeaways are that vitamin E is a powerful antioxidant with the potential to support cardiovascular, cognitive, and immune health. However, the evidence surrounding supplementation, especially at high doses, is complex.
Right.
And it carries potential risks. So prioritizing a balanced diet, rich in vitamin E-containing foods like nuts, seeds, vegetable oils, should be the cornerstone of ensuring adequate intake. High-dose supplementation should only be considered under the guidance of a healthcare professional.
Yeah, I mean, that really underscores, you know, we've talked about this throughout the whole series, like the complexity of nutrition. It goes so far beyond just popping a pill, right? Like, it's about looking at your diet as a whole.
Absolutely.
And, you know, as we've kind of gone through these four now, you know, we've seen how these fat-soluble vitamins, they interact, you know, in these intricate ways. They influence so many bodily functions. It really makes you think about, you know, what other unexpected partnerships and interactions within our nutrition might be impacting our health that we don't even realize yet. So I hope that maybe this series encourages, you know, our listeners to take a more holistic look at their own dietary habits and overall well-being.
Mm-hmm. That's a really insightful point.
Yeah.
Yeah. The interconnectedness of the nutrients we consume is a fascinating and constantly evolving field of study.
Yeah, for sure. Well, thank you so much for sharing your expertise with us throughout this whole series.
It's been my pleasure.
And to all of you listening, thank you for joining us on these deep dives.
So welcome to the show. The best round of just